Welcome everyone to this WebSphere Support Technical Exchange session. Today's topic is WebSphere Application Server v6.1 for ZOS Exit Plan, a step-by-step install, configure, migrate to version 8 using Installation Manager on ZOS. Today's presenter is Sri Talluri. Sri works in Level 2 support for WebSphere Application Server for ZOS, helping customers resolve any issues with using this product. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Sri. You may begin.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for the kind words. Hi, everybody. I'm Sri Talluri. I work for the WebSphere Application Server ZOS Level 2 team. Most of my work involves helping customers resolve any problems that they may encounter using the product via PMRs. As most of you may already know, that WebSphere App Server version 6.1 is commissioned to go out of service by the end of this month. So this presentation makes an attempt to lay out a detailed step-by-step process to move from version 6.1 to version 8. The reason I picked version 8 is to also cover a new piece to the puzzle, Installation Manager, that we need to use to install WebSphere Application Server version 8 and above. Slide 2, Dave. So the agenda kind of runs like this. First, we'll get ourselves familiar with the IBM new product, the Installation Manager. And once we install the Installation Manager, we will use that to install our WebSphere Application Server version 8 on Z. And we'll also try to apply a fix pack on top of both the Installation Manager as well as the version 8, just to get ourselves familiar with applying fix packs using the Installation Manager. And once we have the version 8 installed and available on the system, I'll show you how we'll migrate from version 6.1 to version 8. In the migration process, we will need to use a tool called WCT, WebSphere Customization Toolbox, and to use the product on your host machine or the local machine, you would need Installation Manager installed on your local machine as well. So we're going to kind of run through that as well to see how to use the tool to define a migration definition so that we could generate the migration jobs that we would run eventually to migrate the version 6.1 to version 8. And after the jobs are run, we'll start the service to see, you know, the service come up fine. Slide 3. Just a high-level overview of the Installation Manager. IBM Installation Manager is a new product that was introduced last year. It came out from the Rational family. It's based off Eclipse on Windows operating system, and on the Unix or Z, it's mostly a Unix. It runs as a Unix-based program. You could invoke the Installation Manager using the shell scripts or from an MVS batch jobs. IBM Installation Manager offers more flexibility in the sense that a WebSphere admin who's responsible for the product in your shop doesn't have to rely so much on the SMP or the MVS system programmers, where you have to request them to apply any fix packs and then go on from there. With the introduction of Installation Manager, you can apply the maintenance yourself and then use the product. Flip side, more work, but then the good part of it is that you have the flexibility to, you know, maintain, install, or install the product to make your own decisions. Slide 4. So a couple of features of Installation Manager. Using the Installation Manager, you can query the available fix packs that are out there for the product. You can install, like I said, you can install and uninstall the product. And the Installation Manager uses a local or remote repository to the product or the fix packs and then install on top of your version 8. The IBM Installation Manager on ZOS information, the program number, FMID, and comp ID, in case you're curious. Slide 5. Program directory for IBM Installation Manager is a starting point where it lays out all the detailed instructions on how to install the product. You would still need your SMPE team to install the product repository, on ZOS. So they would have to run through this program directory, at least to the half of it, to install the repository itself onto the Z system. And from then on, as a WebSphere admin, you take over and then install the installation manager itself, and then move on installing the with the version 8. The link to that, I mentioned the link of the program directory in the slide as well. Slide 6. Installation manager is available via the custom-built program delivery offering or the system pack, server pack, or and even from Fix Central. The distribution medium is a tape, a physical tape, or you can download the file. The file itself is in the form of a RHEL file, which is the SMP component of ZOS identifies and then uses that to install the product on the ZOS system. The PSP bucket is a very good information material for you before you start installing the product, where we go over for any prerequisites that you need to install the product or any hyper-APRs that you need to have on the system before installing the product. Slide 7. The hardware and software requirements, basically you would need at least ZOS 1.10 or above, the SMPE version 3.5. You need JDK of at least, the 1.5 JDK at least on the system. Next, slide 8. The DASD storage requirements for Installation Manager is what's that shown in the table there. Slide 9. So the previous two slides are more for the SMPE guys, where they install the repository for you. They would look at those the DASD storage requirements and the prereq of the ZOS operating system, and then try to install the repository for you on the system. And once they do their bit and install the repository, what they would give you is these two PDSs. The first one is the SGIN kit, which is IAM Installation Manager kit. It's an HFS. And the second PDS would be a series of jobs that you would need to run for installing the Installation Manager. And before you install the Installation Manager, you have kind of three options. You can allow it to run as a single super user or a single non-super user, or a number of users connected to a group. The third is the most preferable way, because you may have a team who is responsible for the product, so it's not the same person installing the product every time. You can have other people also use Installation Manager to install the product. And once you have those PDSs from your SMP guys, you'll have to run those three jobs that I mentioned there from the SGIN JCL. The first one is basically the Gintu ADMN creates the user IDs and groups required to install the product. The second is allocating an HFS, Gintu CFS, where the product would actually physically reside. And the third, Gintu INST, is the job which actually uses the IAM repository that the SMP guys put it for you, and then installs the IAM runtime. Slide 10. So once you get those two PDSs from SMPE, mount the HFS as read-only. So the default path would be the one that I mentioned there, Installation Manager / VNR for IBM. And once it's mounted as read-only, you can go and then kind of check to see how the product's laid out. And there's a directory called offerings, and if you go into the offerings directory and do your listing, you would find the actual jar files, which is the product itself, and it also has the version in the jar file name. And you can identify that, okay, in this case, the Installation Manager version was 1.4.3. Slide 11. So we're going to look a little bit into the first job, the Gintu admin. Like I said, this job creates a user ID that will be responsible for this Installation Manager. And also, that user ID will be part of a group. And before running this job, the job expects that you have these profiles, the rack of profiles already defined for your ZOS system. The first series of profiles are for the class facility, and the second ones are for Unix privileges. Basically, it will let the user to set any APF attributes or program control bits or change ownership or change permissions on the file system. And the job itself must be run with a user ID that has a rack of special privileges. Slide 12. Before running the job, copy the jobs into a separate data set so that you don't mess with the actual jobs themselves. And it'll allow you to hand edit, and if by chance anything goes wrong, you can always go back and get the original copy. So that's always safe. So make a copy of those three jobs into a separate data set, and the MVS system programmer should be able to give the job parameters that are needed for the job to run on the system. There are a couple of things that you would have to manually edit into the job. You have to specify the group ID, the user IDs. You can check those with your Unix system services people, or at least pick a range that you know that's not in use on the system. Usually, the user home directories are in the format of either /u plus the user ID or user / the user ID, so you would know which format that system pertains to, and then you could just use that and change that accordingly in the job itself. And basically, after you submit the job will create the user ID, the group, with all the privileges. After you run the job and the job runs successfully, you would need to change the password for the user ID that's created. Slide 13. So the job looks like this. The blue ones are where you have to manually edit. So in this case, the group, I just stuck to the defaults. The group's IAM group, user is the IAM admin, and I picked the range of 500 where I know on my system that no one's using those UIDs in that range. Home / UIM admin. And remember where I said the job assumes that you have those rack of profiles defined. The reason being that in this job, you're permitting read access for the user ID for those profiles. So you'll see how we're permitting the read access there. And then once you run the job, it's pretty straightforward. The job should not pose any problems running. It should run successfully. And then if you need to add any other user IDs for this group so that they can use the installation manager, you'll have to connect them to the group. Slide 14. In my case, when I ran the job, I assumed those rack of profiles were set on the system, but they weren't, and the job failed. So I thought, you know, that's one good observation, so that I would mention it out there. So basically, the job failed in my case where it was not able to define those read access to those profiles because the profiles were not even present on the system. So I had to go back and then define the profiles so that the job would run successfully. Slide 15. So now you're done with the first job. The second job, this job is also pretty straightforward. All it does is it creates a file system and mounts the file system at the desired mount point. Once the job is run, you could check to see the mount point to see how if the file system is mounted and the mount point was actually created. This job needs to be run with an user ID who has UID 0, only because that you need to create a mount point and mount the file system on that mount point. Slide 16. So in this job, like before, the ones in blue is where you have to define the file system name on the volume where you are going to create, if it is going to be an HFS or ZFS type. The dash disk space is by default. That's what those are the minimum requirements. 2,500 cylinders and an extents of 250. Usually, you're okay with that. I have never found any issue where we ran out of space. So that should be good. And the mount point, I strongly recommend to have the default mount point of Installation Manager. If not, you'll have to make a mental note and then be aware of the mount point that you have specified when you run the shell scripts or anything like that. It's always easy to stick to the defaults so that, you know, there's no chance of any user errors. And the owner would be the IAM admin that we just created from the previous job, and the group would be the IAM group. And the output of the job kind of looks something in the later, the bottom part of the slide where it created the HFS and mounted the HFS at the desired mount point, 17. Now, this is the main job. The Gin2 INST is the job that would actually look at the IAM repository that the SMP guys put out there and then install the Installation Manager runtime for you at that mount point that we just, and the file system that we just created in the previous slide. So once this job is run, we can go and look if there are any problems with the job. If the job fails for some reason, it would write out log files in the Installation Manager app data logs directory, so you could go back and look at them. And if there is ever a need for you to rerun the job, just go into the Installation Manager mount point directory, delete everything, and you can rerun the job. 18. So this job kind of looks like this. The installation directory would be the Installation Manager bin that we just created, the mount point that we created before. And the app data would be the data location. I don't think you have to edit them. They're already included in the job because the job defaults to the / Installation Manager. This is where you have to be careful if you decide to mount this on a different mount point, that you have to go into the jobs and then make sure the mount point reflects what you have intended it to. One thing I observed when I ran the job was that this job was writing out an output file to the root HFS. Most of the time on Z systems, the root HFS is pretty minimum. It does not have enough storage because everything is set up off a mount point and on an individual file system. So if there's a chance when you run the job that, you know, those logs can blow out the root file system. And in this case, the job ran fine, but then when it was writing those logs into the root file system, it couldn't find enough space there. And this is something I'm pursuing with the Installation Manager development team to see if we can change the code there to not to write out logs into the root file system. 19. So basically, I mentioned the path where it is writing into the root file system. It's Eclipse, the timestamp, and the configuration. And now I have to go and remove all those files in there to, you know, relieve the root file system of the space. So after this job is run, your Installation Manager runtime is created. So you could go into the bin directory, Eclipse tools, and then there are a series of commands. There are actually a lot of commands, very useful commands. You could find information on them in the Installation Manager Info Center. And one of the commands is to just verify the version that you just installed. And so if you do an IMCL version, it will tell you which version you installed. The latest is 1.5.3. The reason I started with 1.4.3 is to show you how we will apply maintenance to this and move to 1.5.3. Slide 20. So now that we have installed the Installation Manager on 1.4.3, we will try to upgrade the maintenance to 1.5.3, the latest, which is 1.5.3 out there. So there are two ways to go about this. One is circle back and have order the 1.5.3 PTF, where the SMP guys will do their part and then give you those two PDSs, and you do everything again. Or you can by yourself go and download the 1.5.3 fix pack and then install it on top of your existing Installation Manager. And since we have already covered the first aspect of it involving SMP, this offers more flexibility where you as a WebSphere admin or the installation or the person responsible for the installation manager could go and update the maintenance of the product itself. So what we are trying to do is, what I'm trying to show in the next slides would be to go download the latest fix pack of the installation manager and then install it on top of 143 by yourself. Slide 21. The mentioned link is where you'll find the downloads for the installation manager and the instructions. 22. So if you go out to the, and the link from the previous slide would lead you to the Fix Central site where you can get the latest versions of Installation Manager. So once you're on the Fix Central site, punch in the product, and then if you select the ZOS and continue, slide 23. And if you browse for the latest fix packs, it will at this point you will prompt for the IBM ID, and if you don't have one, you'll have to register an IBM ID so that you can get access to the IBM products. 24. So now once you are authenticated into our Fix Central site, we will show you the latest fix packs for that product that you have chosen. And so we picked 153 in this case, and then you click continue, 25. So basically, it's pretty straightforward. You go to the, you will end up to the jar file, and then you agree to the terms and conditions and try to download the fix pack to your local machine. 26. So this is where you have three download preferences, and I think HTTP worked the best for me, the non-disruptive way of doing things. Sometimes the bulk HTTP can get lost. You save the file to your local workstation, slide 27. So once you have the file on your local workstation, you need to put the fix pack jar file onto your ZOS system. If you already have a good enough space on your ZOS file system, you don't have to run through this slide that I'm going to talk about. But then the reason I talk about this slide is to use the jars that were supplied with the Installation Manager product, where you can use this job to create an additional HFS with a desired size so that you could put all of the fix packs that you're downloading into these HFSs so that it's structured and you know that you defined a totally new HFS with a large amount of size, and you know you're never going to run out of space for that. So this is one of the sample jobs that the Installation Manager provides. So basically, this job would create an HFS with the size. Size, the minimum is 2,200 cylinders, but you can always go above if you wanted to. And then you could mount it at any desired mount point. I just chose IBM Rep IAM Rep as the Installation Manager repository. Slide 28. So once you have that HFS defined and mounted, you could copy the jar file that you just downloaded off the IBM site to your local machine to FTP that back to your ZOS system onto this file system. So in this case, the zip file that we downloaded was the 153 version fix pack. Basically, once you put it on your ZOS system, it's going to can do an LS and see, you know, it is there for you to use. Now that you have the fix pack on the ZOS file system, you can query the zip file to see it is actually the same version that you intended to upgrade to. So there's a command. There's actually a lot of useful commands with Installation Manager that you could play with. So one of the commands is if you can just do a query on the zip file, and it will show you the version that it is. So in this case, IMCL list available packages and repositories is the argument where you provide the zip file location, and it will look at it and then say, oh, yes, it is 153 version. unzip the file. You don't have to. I just did it for my own interest, so that I wanted to look at the offerings directory and also verify that it was 153. But you really don't have to unzip the fix pack that you just downloaded to your ZOS file system. 29. So once you have the fix pack available on your ZOS file system, you would use this Gin3 INST. Remember, we used the Gin2 INST to install the installation manager itself, but whenever you try to apply any maintenance on top of it, the job that you would use is the Gin3 INST. And these jobs, if you look at those jobs, they have really good comments. They explain in detail what they intend to do and how to run them. So it's pretty intuitive. So basically, in this job, what we would do is point to the fix pack that we just downloaded, and then it would install the fix pack onto your existing installation manager 143 so that we apply the maintenance. So once the job is run, well, the other important thing here is the package ID that the job needs, the one that I mentioned in blue there, COM IBM CIC agent. That's the package ID. It's usually the first part of the jar file. Usually, if you look at the info center of the installation manager, it will tell you how the package ID, how you can identify the package ID from a given zip file or a jar file. It's usually the first part of the jar file name. So that would be the package ID, and it needs to be correct. If not, the job would fail. And the installation directory is where we already installed or the original version of the installation manager. And then point to the repository. And you would notice that in this case, the repository that I pointed is not actually the zip file itself, but a config file. Remember that I unzipped the zip file, and then when you unzip the file, there's a file called repository.config, and you could actually point to that file itself to install the product. The reason I did was I wanted to try different variations of the repository. The book said, as far as the repository argument goes, you could use the zip file, jar file, or this config file, or even the remote repository. Like, you can point to the IBM site itself. I have not tried that because there needs to be some additional setup where you have to provide your IBM ID and passwords and all such. So I have not tried that yet. But then the easiest and the least disruptive way is to actually download the fix packs to your local machine, and then, you know, FTP that to your Z system, and then use that to upgrade your product. So once the job runs, you can verify the version that you just installed, like kind of what we did before with the first copy of the installation manager. So it's going to be the same command again. Now the command would reflect the new 153 version that we just applied, the fix pack that we just applied. Slide 30. So now we have installed the installation manager. We applied a fix pack on top of the installation manager. So we are kind of familiar with how the installation manager works. Using that, now we will try to install the WebSphere version 8 itself. And same as the installation manager, WebSphere version 8 also has its own program directory where it has detailed steps of how to install the base product or the repository onto the Z system. Typically, your SMP guy would go through half of the document to get the repositories onto the system, and then you would then jump in and try to install the product. If you remember in the previous versions of WebSphere 6 or 7 or 5, the SMP programmer or the MVS system programmer would give you the SMP HFS and the product HFS for you to use. But in this, with the installation manager in place, you would create those SMP HFS and the product HFS. With version 8, you don't have, product libraries, not the product HFS. SMB HFS and the product libraries. With V8, you don't have the product libraries anymore. In a PDS, everything is off the HFS. So all you would need is just the SMB HFS, which we will install using the installation manager. So, and then same as the installation manager or any product on Z, it is distributed with the CB PDO system pack. But I don't think the WebSphere base product is available on Fix Central for some licensing issues. I'm not sure about all the facts there. The distribution medium, again, if you order, you can order a tape or you can download the RHEL file from the Shop Z series online. Slide 31. So the file itself is in the format of a RHEL file, which the SMP will read and then install the WebSphere version 8 repository onto the Z system. The PSP bucket, again, talks about any prereqs or any hyper APRs that needs to be on the system before using or installing the product. For WebSphere version 8 on Z, the program number, FMID, comp ID, details. Slide 32. The hardware and software requirements for WebSphere version 8 is pretty much the same as the installation manager. We need at least ZOS 110 or above, SMP version 3.5 running on the ZOS level, a 1.5 JDK at least on the system. Slide 33. And the requirements are the same for the driving and the target systems here. I mentioned the target system requirements because you can actually, there could be two, you could actually have a driving and a target system where the driving system is where you install the product and you can use those resulting HFS copied over to the target system where the product would actually run. Basically, both the requirements on both of these LPORs would be the same. Slide 34. Again, the DASD storage requirements for WebSphere version 8. The version 8 is kind of big, so probably need a significant amount of DASD. Slide 35. So now, once the SMP team installs the WebSphere version 8 repository onto the system using the program directory. You would, as a WebSphere admin, you would come in and use the installation manager to actually install the WebSphere version 8 product using the repository. So basically what we expect from the SMP team would be the SBBO IMR, which is the WAS 8 repository HFS, kind of similar to what we have seen with Installation Manager before, and also in SBBO JCL dataset, which will have the installation jobs. Slide 36. So once you get those after the SMP people have done their work, you mount that. File system has read-only. We'll stick to the default path again. And then in the jobs PDS, there are two jobs that you would need to run to install the version 8 product. The first job would be the BBO1 CFS, which would allocate the file system and mount the file system at the desired mount point. And the second job, the INST, would actually install the product using the version 8 repository that the SMP support has put out there. Slide 37. So the first job, BBO1 CFS, is pretty much straightforward. It basically defines an HFS and then at the desired mount point. Once you run the, it shouldn't have any problems, really, unless you have any storage issues there. Slide 38. This is the main job that would install the WebSphere version 8 product. So In other terms, this job would create the S&P HFS for us. So in this job would use the installation manager to read off the WebSphere version 8 repository and then create the version 8 S&P HFS, if you want to call it. So again, the package ID would be com. This information is also in our info center where we talk about the package IDs for a specific product. So you can get the information from our info center or even from the program directory there. And the installation directory would be the directory where you install the file system at the desired mount point with the job that we ran previously. If you look at the repositories, so the repositories points to the WAS 8 repository that the SMP guys have provided us. And that's a read-only version. And so this job pretty much reads off the WAS 8 repository and creates the SMP HFS. Once you run the job, the output would be that it installed the product successfully. Slide 39. So once the job's run, you could go into the mount point there and do a listing, see how the product's laid out. Should be something similar to what you have seen before in the previous versions. And then you can always use the IMCL command to check the product. There's a list install packages command using the installation manager, which would show you all the products that you installed using the installation manager. And now in this case we have installed the installation manager itself and also the WebSphere version 8. So it will show you those two products that we just installed, the 153 and WebSphere base version 8. Slide 40. So now that we have the version 8 base product installed on the system, we could go and get a fix pack, kind of similar to what we have done with the installation manager. So the fix packs are available at the Fix Central website. Go and then you can get download the latest fix pack of WebSphere version 8. Download that to your local machine, HTTP that to your Xeo system, and then run one of the installation manager jobs to install the fix pack on top of the WebSphere version 8. So you again go to the fix. If you go to the Fix Central site and then select the product and the operating system, and slide 41. And then if you browse for the fixes for that product and that operating system, you would find the latest fix pack that's available out there. In this case, when I was doing this, 8.03 was the latest. So I just selected that and downloaded that to my local machine. Slide 42. So once you have downloaded the fix pack to your local machine, again, like what we have done for the installation manager before, you can create a separate HFS so that you could FTP that fix pack to your Z in a separate file system so that you don't run into any space issues. Or if you have enough space, you can just create a directory on your Unix system services and then FTP that. So this job is pretty optional, but I wanted to use the sample jobs that the installation manager provided, so kind of showing how you can create a file system at a mount point and then use that for the fix packs. Slide 43. So if you have created a file system at that mount point, copy the fix pack from your local machine, FTP the fix pack from your local machine to the Z file system where you want it to. And then if you're doing LS, you'll see the zip file there with the fix pack 8.03 in the name of the zip file. And then you could use the installation manager command to see the available packages that are there out there on the system. And again, you have to point to which zip file you want it to read off. So the repositories, you point it to the fix pack 3 and it'll show you that, I do recognize the zip file, and then it is a WebSphere version 8.03. 44. So now that we have the fix pack copied over to the ZEOS file system, we will use this job, Gen3INST, to install the fix pack on top of the WebSphere version 8. This is kind of similar to what we did before, from where we installed 153 on top of 143. So it is the same job, and in the job we will replace the package ID with the WebSphere package ID there, and the target path with the one we just created, the base file system, and the repository would be the zip file that we just downloaded, the fix pack. So once the jobs run, it should probably take 10-15 minutes for the job to run, and once it's run successfully, you could check if the product is installed by using the installation manager commands there again, and then it'll show you now that it has two packages installed. One is the installation manager itself at 153, and the other one is the WebSphere version 8 at 803.45. So now that we have the installation manager installed, we applied a fix pack on the installation manager. We have the WebSphere version 8 base installed. We applied a fix pack on top of the version 8 base. Typically, we are at the WebSphere 8.03 version at the moment on the system. So we're going to use that product and then try to migrate our existing version 6.1 to 8.03. So the migration itself, the process for migration, of course, it needs the version 8 product to where you're trying to migrate to on the system. And then in order to perform migration, you need to run certain jobs for the migration. And to generate those jobs, you will need a tool called the WCT tool, WebSphere Customization Toolbox, installed on your local machine. And again, to get the tool, you would need to have the installation manager installed on your local machine. With version 8, you would need to essentially install the installation manager on your, in this case, let's assume your local machine is a Windows machine. Most of them are. So you would install an installation manager on your Windows local machine or laptop. And then you would, once you have that, you could go and install the WebSphere customization toolbox, which we would need to define a migration definition and also generate the migration jobs for us to run. Migration is, when you run those jobs, what it does is it'll create a new version 8 profile of the template and then copy your existing v6.1 configuration into the new version 8 profile. And is there anything else I have in the slide here? Yeah, once you have defined the migration definition, there is a member in there that will have the instructions on how to run the jobs and the series of jobs that needs to be run, or if there are any manual steps that needs to be performed before running the jobs. So we can kind of go over through all of that and then eventually run the jobs to get us to version 8 from 6.1. And then once the migration jobs have run successfully, you can start the servers. Slide 46. So some high-level overview of migration and prereq. To run the migration, you need to have the v6.1 and version 8 on the same LPAR. You cannot migrate a existing v6.1 to v8 onto a different LPAR. So both have to, the source and the target have to be on the same system. In other words, you can migrate cells that span across LPARs, across a sysplex, or even other operating systems. It is just that let's assume if you have a node that's on another LPAR or another operating system, let's say Windows, to migrate that node, you have to run the migration on that particular local operating system or LPAR. So, but then that's the only restriction, but you can actually migrate a cell that is that spans the sysplex or even other operating systems. And there are some tools that are available for the WebSphere app server distributed which are not supported on Z, so you cannot use those shell scripts, the pre-upgrade, post-upgrade, or manage profiles. The amount of storage that you would need to migrate from 6.1 to 8 basically depends on how big your existing 6.1 is, because essentially what the migration does is it creates a V8 profile and then copies everything off your 6.1 to the V8 profile. It's a glorified copy job. So what I would do, I mean, the best recommended solution would be to go into your existing 6.1 HFS and query how much the size of it is. You know, you may have, 10 nodes or, 100 apps in there. So the size actually, varies from system to system. So if you go and do a DF or even query the file system, you would know how big the file system is. And then the recommended way is to go 1.5 at least, more than what you already have with the 6.1 size. So that would be the best way to go about to determine the amount of storage, that's the space you would need for the version 8. And also, when you run the migration job, the temp file would also be, I would recommend it to be at least, 1.5 times bigger than your existing 6.1. The only reason being that during the migration, it copies everything, your existing V6.1 configuration into the temp directory. It copies everything over. It would migration process will never touch your existing version 6.1 configuration. It will copy it over to a temp directory. So essentially, we're moving everything to the temp, and then it will use the copied version of 6.1 in the temp directory to migrate. So the temp needs to be at least 1.5 times big. And also, if you run into some problems, if you ever have a need to run traces, then again, all the traces go into the temp directory during the migration process. So typically, you would need that extra space in there so that you don't run into any, space issues. Slide 47. Again, some pre-migration considerations. A deploy manager node migrated to V8. Can go back and manage a node that is at 6.0.2.12. Anything below that, the V8 node cannot communicate. So you could essentially have a V8 cell with the deployer manager at V8 and a node on 6.0.2.12 at least. If there is ever a need for a pre 6.1 server from another cell or from any other system, that it would system meaning on any other ELP or on ZOS system. If you have a need where that server would try to communicate with one of the migrated version 8 server, then you would need the libraries of that older version defined in the daemon proc of version 8 so that they both can communicate. WebSphere version 8 does not support the DB2 JDBC driver, the local JDBC driver, RRS JDBC driver. You have to either, before migration, upgrade the read resources to use the universal JDBC driver, or there's a utility that we provide out there that you could use before or after the migration. Or even after the migration, you could just go, into the admin console and then, delete the data sources that are still using the RRS JDBC driver to the universal JDBC driver. Slide 48. And also, version 8 does not include the Connect JDBC driver for SQL. There are some utility tools out there that we provide so that you could upgrade the data sources that are on this driver to the DataDirect driver or the SQL Server JDBC driver. And on your version 6.1, if you have any need for hardware crypto, then you would probably be updating your Java security files and also the local policy jar. You might have got a modified copy of the policy jar. And if you had done that in your 6.1, before migration, you have to make a backup copy of those so that once you're done with the migration, you could move them over to the new version 8. Slide 49. slide 49. Migrating applications. Version 8 is pretty much backward compatible. The apps that were developed on either version 6.1, which is J2E 1.4, are supported and should run okay on version 8. But if some reason, if those apps were even before version 6.1, I mean, let's say from 5 you move them to 6, and if there were some compatibility issues, then the migration job might fail to, you know, install your applications there. So to be on the safe side, there's a tool called Application Migration Toolkit. It's an Eclipse-based tool. So if you have an Eclipse IDE on your Windows laptop, you could download the tool and then use the tool to actually migrate your applications, your older applications, to kind of conform to the J2E 6, which the version 8 spec is. You don't have to, but I would say run the migration jobs, and then if some of the apps fail to migrate, then you can always go back and then use the tool to migrate those apps, and then you could actually manually install those apps using the admin console and so forth. And also there's a Red Book out there which explains how you use the tool to migrate your apps. There's some pretty good screenshots and everything. I would have loved to cover that too, but then it's a beast by itself. It'll take another 30 minutes for me to do that. So, but it's pretty intuitive. The Red Book, between the Red Book and the documentation that comes with the toolkit, you should be able to do that. Slide 50. So the checklist before migration, you have to migrate the Deploy Manager node first. If you're migrating a Deploy Manager, if you're migrating a standalone server, then it is just a standalone server, so you don't have, you are just migrating a server there. But if it is an ND setup, you have to migrate the Deploy Manager node first, and then after that, migrate each node separately, depending on how many nodes you have. And when you are migrating the Deploy Manager, when you're running the migration, make sure no one's using the admin console, because remember, the migration copies your 6.1 stuff over to the version 8 profile. So when you're running the migration jobs, if someone else is, you know, let's say defining a data source on the admin console, you know, you're losing that information. So make sure no one's using the admin console. I mean, the Deploy Manager does not have to be, you know, shut down. It can be available. But then, you know, if you feel that, you know, someone else might use the admin console, then, you know, shut down the Deploy Manager if there is a need. And then before migration, backup the nodes. There are some utilities that we offer, backup config, and which will back up your existing 6.1. And there's another utility called restore config, which would use the backup config information and then would restore to 6.1. In my experience, I think the best way is to make a backup copy of the HFS itself instead of using the tools. Verify if you have any region constraints for the migration to run, because migration jobs are really long-running jobs, and they take a lot of time. It's not as simple or straightforward as the installation manager jobs. So, you know, if you have any region constraints, make sure, you know about that, and then try to unset those. And when you're running the migration, there may be a situation where you have other cells on the system, migration process is totally, it is non-disruptive, and the other cells can run okay. So it would not interfere with any other cells that you have running on the system, except for the cell that you're trying to migrate to. Migration does not uninstall any previous versions. It just copies over to the new version 8 profile. Slide 51. If you ever have the need to roll back, if migration fails or runs successfully, but then if you ever feel that you have to go back to 6.1, you know, like I mentioned, we offer the backup and the restore utilities there. There is a script that you need to run, disablement reversal. I will I will explain that in the slides when we do the migration definition, how that you know affects this script. And the best way is to just make a backup copy of the HFS, and then if you ever want to go back, you know, you could use that. And also remember, migration never touches your existing v6.1. It will just copy that to a temp, and from the temp, it will copy to the new v8 profile. So you could actually use your existing 6.1 that is right there. You don't have to go back and, you know, get the backup HFS mounted or anything like that. So next slide, 52. So in order for us to start the migration, like I mentioned before, you need to have the Installation Manager installed on Windows so that we could get the other tool, the WCT tool, on Windows. And then you can define a migration definition for us to generate the jobs that you would use eventually. So same thing, you go to the Fix Central site. I mean, the link would show all the available packages. In this case, I just picked Windows because that's where my local machine runs. And then slide 53. So you select the product, and then on the operating system, and it will show you the latest version, again, 1.5.3 on Windows. So prompts for the IBM ID, slide 54. You download the product onto your local machine, 55. So once you download the product, I mean, this is on Windows, so we don't have the two-step of where you have to FTP that back to the C system because you're installing Installation Manager on Windows itself. So once you download the zip file onto Windows, you open it, there's a install.exe, double-click on it, and it will just kind of walk you through the installation process. So you would check, you know, the product, and then next, and slide 56. You accept the license, and next, 57. It will prompt for the directory where you would want the Installation Manager to install, pretty standard on, you know, for any software on Windows. I know the slides are a little fuzzy, but then I wanted the slides to be in the PDF so that if you ever are going to refer to this material, you know how we are going through the process of installing the product. So you may not see the contents there clearly, but what these slides are pretty much is that the install program is prompting for the Installation Manager directory where it will install the product, and then so you select under program files or wherever you desire, click next, and then you install the product. Slide 58. So once you install the product, you have to go to Start Programs, and then you know, click on your IBM Installation Manager, and after the workbench loads, you can either go to File Preferences and then add a repository. Or if you, since there is nothing else, it's just the Installation Manager itself that we installed. The first time, if you click on the install on the workbench page, it'll prompt you to add a repository because it needs a repository from where it'll identify a software package and install it for you. So in this case, since this being Windows, we could easily, you know, connect to the remote repository, which is our IBM site. So we're going to define a I'm going to add a repository here. So you click on install, it'll prompt you to add a repository, and you click on the repositories, and slide 59. It's pretty straightforward. I mean, once you're going through the panels, you would just know the flow there. So you add a repository, and for the WCT tool, the repository location is what I mentioned there in the slide, and this information is available in our Info Center, where we talk about the WebSphere customization toolbox and the repository where it's available. So you could just punch in the location there and click OK. Slide 60. So once again, it'll prompt for the IBM ID so that you can get access to the software package. So you give that, and then there's a after the repository is set up, you can do a test connection to see if your Installation Manager on your local machine can actually connect to the repository. And then if everything works okay, the test connection should work. Slide 61. So now once you have added the repository, you can now go and to the go back to the Installation Manager workbench and then click on install. And this time, now that we have a repository defined, it will go and find the repository, and then it will say that, yes, I have found a repository for you, and there's a software available at that repository location if you want to install. So you select the software, WCT in our case, and then click Next and slide 62. In this slide, again, I apologize if you can't see it clearly there. It will prompt for a shared resources directory, and this is very important. That shared resources directory is something the installation manager will use to, it's kind of like a working directory for the installation manager. It'll store all the artifacts of all of the products that it has installed, the history and everything. So, and it might get big, and you cannot change this directory in future. So you have to make sure that you pick the directory, you know, that has, you know, enough space in it, or a separate drive, or for that matter. And once you've selected your shared resources directory, click Next. It'll take you to another prompt where you would select the install location of the WCT tool itself. You select that, click Next, slide 63. So it'll offer you the product that's available on the repository out there. And the WCT tool has individual components in them, like the profile management tool or the migration management. I know we are doing the migration, and we're probably interested in the migration management tool. But then if you ever were going to install version 8, a standalone version 8 by itself, then you probably need the profile management tool. So we'll just take everything that's available out there. So install the whole toolbox, in other words, and then click Next, and then you install it, slide 64. And once you install the product, I mean, IAM will tell you that the product is successfully installed and you finish it, slide 65. So once you have the product installed, you'll go to, you know, Start Programs, and you would find your WCT toolbox. You select that, you start the tool, and once the tool starts up, you would see all the individual tool components that it has in there, and we're going to select the ZOS Migration Management tool and launch it. And once it's launched, slide 66, it will prompt for a migration location where the definition is in itself is stored. So it's just a directory structure that it is asking for. You give that at the desired directory location and then finish. Then you have a migration location, and then now you will go ahead and then define a migration definition so that we could generate the migration jobs. Slide 67. It will offer you which server or node that you want to migrate to. And remember, if it is an ND setup, you have to migrate the deployment manager node first. So you select the deployment manager and then give the name for the definition. And then next, slide 68. It'll prompt for the high-level qualifier where you would which you would use to download the jobs onto your ZOS system. So and then the next slide, not the next slide, sorry, Dave. In this slide, the next step where it would prompt for the procedure library, that would be your sys1.proclib or the PDS where you have all the starter procs for the system. The reason it prompts that is that in the process of migration, the jobs would generate the new version 8 starter procs, and it will actually copy those starter procs into that the PDS that you mentioned here. So this is something that you probably already are familiar with, or you know, go back to your MVS system programmer and find out the information. And the WebSphere App Server product directory. This directory would be the directory where we installed the WebSphere version 8 and applied the fix pack. So kind of like the SMP HFS. And then it's always better to have a symlink to that so that, you know, your runtime is pointing to the symlink but not to the actual product directory, so that in case if you want to swap in future, or in case you want to get a separate 8, let's say for example 8.04, and then you could just, you know, switch the directory because you're using the symlinks. It's very flexible that way. So if you, and after that, you click next on slide 69. The mount point where you want your version 8 runtime to be, HFS to be mounted, and the HFS and the volume. All these values would be translated into the migration jobs that gets generated. So it is important that you kind of have a good idea of where you want to mount your runtime version 8 and also the file system, HFS and the volume on which you want that file system on. And the next panel, and this, the second panel in this slide is from configuration. So this would be the 6.1 location, the mount point or the directory location of 6.1. So in my case, it was the WebSphere ND Deployment Manager. And two, the version 8 configuration that we will create. So it would be the WASV 8 config and the Deployment Manager directory. And the started procs, the new started procs, version 8 started procs, names. These are pretty much the default. So I just stuck with them. You could have your own, you know, names if you prefer. And the replay started procedure command is checked by default. So if you have a procedure with the same name, it will replace it. Maybe good or bad, because you don't want to overwrite something that's already out there. So if you feel that there's a procedure out there with the same name, then you want to uncheck this. It will prompt for the WebSphere admin user ID, password, and then confirm password. Click next. Slide 70. In this slide, these are the defaults that are checked. Migrate to support script compatibility. That is where you're telling migration not to change the XML structure of version 6.1 to the XML model of version 8, so that, you know, if in your shop, if you use your, you know, AWS admin scripts heavily, and which rely on these XML attributes and tags of the configuration, they might break. Let's say, for example, the ports in version 6.1 are called transport, but then in version 8, the ports are called channels. So, you know, if you don't check this, it'll change the transport to attribute to a channel. And if you're still using your scripts from version 6.1, he will fail to, you know, identify that. So for starters, I mean, for the migration, so that we don't break anything, you know, just we will take the XML definitions, the config definitions as it is. And these are, I mean, it's backward compatible. They are supported, so you can just, you know, migrate now with whatever you have on your current 6.1. Disable previous deployment manager. What this does is, if for some reason you migrate today and then somebody else comes in next week and then is not aware of the migration and then tries to start the 6.1 servers, if you check the disable, it would prevent them from starting the 6.1 servers. And application migration preference, pretty much the defaults. Use the default application installation directory. If you change that, then you should be aware of that, and then make sure, you know, all your applications are, you know, you should be aware where your ear files are being installed too. So it's better to just stick to the default there. Click next and slide 71. Tracing, I mean, we expect the jobs to run successfully, so not going to, you know, have any tracing on at the moment. And then those are the default heap sizes under which the migration jobs would run. And the temp is the temp location that I mentioned, where migration uses to copy over all the 6.1 config and then later move that to a V8 profile. In this case, I created a separate temp HFS big enough to accommodate the migration, and that is where I mounted the HFS at, so that's the mount point. It's not, always stay away from using the standard temp. And the job name, the job parameters that you would need, that you need for the migration jobs, the user that you would want the jobs to be run under. Usually, the user ID the user ID that you use to run the jobs should have UID 0 and RACF special privilege. Click next, slide 72. So it's pretty much confirming that it's going to write this definition to a file there, and then pretty straightforward. You click next, and then finish it. Slide 73. So after you have created the migration definition, it's going to show up in your WCT workbench. And then you could select that, and then if you click on process, this is where it will generate the jobs and then copy them over to your ZOS system. Slide 74. So once you click process, it'll prompt you, are you going to upload it to your target ZOS, and you check that and then say next. Slide 75. And then it will prompt for the host name of the ZOS system, user ID, password that you want to use to FTP these jobs over. And then if you didn't, typically you would allocate those data sets where the migration jobs would be stored. So that's already checked for you. And then if you click finish, it will start to FTP the migration jobs to your ZOS file system. Slide 76. So once that part is done, you will have your migration jobs available on your ZOS file system, and there are two PDSs that you have. One is the control and the data, and the instructions are in the control PDS in a member called BBOMDINS. Same thing. If you were doing a migrate of a federated node, the instructions would be in the respective BBOMMINS. Slide 77. It's very important to read the instructions. It has a couple of manual updates that needs to be done before running the migration jobs. So pretty much it will ask you to update your BPX Power member to include the version 8 HFS that you're going to create. So it will be there for the next IPL of the system. And you make sure you have those modules in linked list or LPA and or APF authorized. And then, since we are creating a new started procs for version 8, you have to define those profiles, the started profiles in the started class for the procs, and then also the user under which those are to be run with. Daemon runs most of the time. All of the control regions run with a user ID. So the daemon and the server are probably the same user ID. You could get this information from your existing V6.1 configuration. Slide 78. So if you are migrating from a pre-6.1 version, then you need to define these profiles that we added to enable those two features, the Enable Trusted Applications feature. If you want to use that feature, which we introduced in 6.1, you need to define the profile. And if you want to use the Sync to OS Thread feature that we introduced in 6.1, you need to define the profile that's mentioned underneath it. In this case, we are talking about migrating from 6.1 to 8, so we don't have to. But if there was ever a situation where you're migrating from, pre-6.1, slide 79. And also in 6.1, we introduced a couple of additional EJB roles. If you're migrating from a pre-6.1, you need to define those. If you're already on 6.1, you don't have to. In the later part of the slide for version 7, since we are talking about migrating from 6.1 to 8, you would probably have to define the EJB roles that were introduced in version 7. So these are all in the migration instructions member, and it lays out all the commands and everything for you, so pretty straightforward. So you have to read the instructions before running the jobs. Slide 80. So basically we have three jobs that you have to run in the order, and the first two jobs can be run with a user that has a UID 0 or if he does not have the UID 0, at least he need to have the read and control update privileges to those mentioned profiles from Unix privilege class. And then the main job, which actually does the migration, should be run with a WebSphere admin user ID. So next slide, 81. So the first job allocates the HFS and then mounts the HFS. Remember in the panels, we were defining a mount point and the HFS name. So pretty much, you know, all of those, that information is translated into the to the jobs here. So it will allocate the HFS and the mount, the desired mount point that we mentioned in the migration panels before. The second job, BBOM DCP, copies all of the starter procs for version 8 into the SysOne proc lib. We talked about that in the panels before, so it will do that. And the third job, the MG3D, is the main migration job that will perform the migration. And it is a big job. It will take some time. It depends on how big your existing V6.1 is. Usually for the deployment manager, I mean, the deployment manager does not have anything in it except for the admin console app. So it's not, this job might not run for that long for the deployment manager itself. But when you are migrating an app server node, I mean, the node may have, you know, 10 servers or even a server, and then it may have as many apps in there. So the version, the migration job version of the app server node really takes a long time to run. That's what I'm trying to make the point across. But in this case, since you are starting to migrate the deployment manager node, this job will migrate the deployment manager node from 6.1 to 8. And basically what it does is, it, like I mentioned before, it will create a new profile, version 8 profile, using the template of version 8. And it'll back up your 6.1 HFS into the temp file that we talked about, and then it'll use the 6.1 configuration in the temp file, and copies everything over to the version 8 target profile. Slide 82. So once the jobs run successfully, you would shut down the deployment manager and the daemon. You know, if you shut down the daemon, everything goes down. So pretty much you're shutting down your whole cell there. And in the instructions, you would have the commands that you would use to start the version 8. All you have to do is use your existing start commands for version 6.1 and replace the proc name with the version 8 proc name that we generated with the jobs. So that's pretty intuitive too. It's in the instructions member, I believe. So once you start the deployment manager on version 8 and then go access your admin console, you should be able to see that your deployment manager node is at version 8 and the app server node is at version 6.1 because we haven't migrated the app server node yet. Slide 83. So like I mentioned before, if you are using your new procedure names, you would have to define those profiles in the started class so that the new server command which has the version 8 proc name is allowed to run on the system. Again, this is all in the instructions member. And the same goes for app server, because when we migrate the app server node, we will have the starter procs for the app server. And the security profiles, I'm just kind of reiterating the points that we just did before. Again, the security profiles that we need to add if you are migrating from pre-version 6.1 or the ones that were in version introduced in version 7, slide 84. So I'm not going to show the panels for the app server node migration. It is pretty much the same as what we have done for the deployment manager. And once you go through the panels and you process the definition, and, you know, the jobs are FTP'd over to your ZOS system. It's very similar to what we have done with the deployment manager node. It will have three, well, actually in this case, five jobs that we need to run to migrate the app server node migration. And the first one being, you know, creating the HFS and mounting the HFS. And the second job, the MCP, would be just to copy the start, the version 8 starter procs for the app server node. And the MG1, 2, 3 Fs are the jobs that will actually migrate your app server node. And you will need your deployment manager up and running to run these jobs, because as part of migration, the migration jobs will try to communicate with the deployer manager. And before you run the jobs, the app server node should be shut down. Slide 85. Again, pretty much the same as what I've talked before. You know, the first two jobs create the HFS and then the starter procs into your SysOne proc lab. The MG1F job and 2F job are optional if you are using XA connectors in your 6.1 configuration. What the 1F job does is to enable the peer restart recovery mode for the server. And then once after you run the 1F job, if you restart the server, it will run in PRR mode, and then it will clear any XA transaction logs for you. And it will go down again. You don't have to stop the server. If you run the MG1F job, you restart your server, it'll come up, and then it'll recover, and then it'll go down. The 2F job is to unset the recovery mode that we just set with the 1F job. So at the moment, the app server is down. Slide 86. Like I mentioned, the MCP job, copies the version, the app server node starter procs into the proc lab. And the MG3F job actually runs the migration. Same as the deploy manager node, it creates a target profile for the app server node and then makes a backup of your existing v6.1 into the temp and then moves everything off your temp to the new V8 app server node profile. And then you have to authorize your servant to the WLM profile. Again, this is mentioned in the instructions there and the command and everything. You need to have your RACF, or if you have RACF special privilege, you can run the command by yourself. Slide 87. So once you're done with the migration, you can now start the app server node. And then from your admin console, if you go and look, you would see it will reflect you have your deploy manager node and the app server node on version 8. Slide 88. If you ever run into any problems during migration, remember we generated those jobs and with the PDFs onto the mainframe system from the migration management tool. There's a member in there called BBOWMDEL for the deploy manager and then MMEV for the app server, which will have all the definitions that you have entered in the panel. So you could go in there and then actually set the trace instead of going back to your migration management tool and set the trace on the panel and then, you know, generate the jobs again. You could just go into these members that are already on your ZOS system and then hand it and enable the trace if you wanted to, and then, rerun the migration job with traces. And then send those job logs to us, if you need level 2's help. 89. Known issues when migrating to V8, there were a couple of known issues. The most important one is the first one that I mentioned there. What happens is there's a situation when you migrated your deploy manager to version 8, and then if you didn't go ahead and migrate your app server node to version 8 at the same time, but then you decided to, run with the mixed version cell for a couple of days, then there is a chance that the version, the app server node, which is still on 6.1, might not start. So we took an APR on it, and then it's available as of 8.02. Same thing again, if you were running in a mixed version cell setup where the deploy manager is on 8 and your app server node is on 6.1, there are some changes made into the SSL certificate alias names, and 6.1 cannot identify the mixed case in there. And if you were using mixed case, then, it might fail. Again, that's available in 8.02. The other ones are just very not that disruptive. Slide 90. So most of these APARs were available in our 8.02 fix pack, and then, I only say that 8.03 is recommended because it's been out there for 4 months, but then the fix pack 8.04 has been there for a month too, so you can always go ahead and get on to the latest fix pack that we have available out there. Slide 91. So basically what we have done is we installed the Installation Manager on Z. We installed version 8 using the Installation Manager. And then we tried to migrate our version 6.28. And as part of that migration, we had to have the WCT tool. But then in order to have the WCT tool, we had to install the Installation Manager on your local machine. So that is what we did. And once you have the WCT tool available for you to use on your local machine, we can go through the panels and create a migration definition and then generate the migration jobs onto the ZOS system. Once you have the jobs available, one of the members in the job is the instructions, and you can go through the instructions and follow all the manual steps that we talked about, and then eventually run the migration jobs, start the servers on V8, and then hopefully everything is run smoothly, and then you have your servers migrated to version 8. Usually, I mean, when I did this on my test system, I didn't have any apps or anything. It's pretty vanilla, so I did not run into much issues, but I do understand in a real-world environment, you might run into some issues where your apps won't migrate and so on and so forth. So we hope it will run smoothly for you, but then if not, we're always here to help you. Slide 92. After all this, the good news is that you don't have to jump on this right away. IBM has extended the out of service by a year, so we are not going to go out of service by the end of this month, but it is actually extended to the end of 2013, September. So you don't have to jump on this right away, so that's the good news. Slide 93. A couple of useful links which I have mentioned out there, which will help you learn more about Installation Manager version 8 and also the migration process itself. Slide 94. If you ever want or are interested in our additional WebShare products and resources, a couple of links out there. And at this point, I would hand this over to Dave. Dave, thanks a lot for moving the slides for me. I know there was a lot of information. And yep. I was kind of pacing myself a little bit in the middle.
Yes. Thank you, Sri. That was a great presentation. And finally, don't forget to connect with us. You can be notified about upcoming webcasts related to the product and topics discussed today by subscribing to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange mailing list. Simply send an email to wsehelp@us.ibm.com with the subject of WSTE Subscribe to get a list of the possible mailing lists you could subscribe to. Also, if there is a topic you would like to see scheduled or if you have any comments that would help us improve our future webcasts, please let us know at that same email address. You could also connect with us through our Facebook page and our Twitter account. Talk to us and let us know how we can make this program better for you. We do welcome any ideas that you may have. Thanks again for your participation. At this time, Audra, we would like to open the lines for questions.
There is a question from Amir Kafagi. Your line is open.
Hey, hi. I just want to ask about applying maintenance for WebSphere version 8 using the Installation Manager. Like, for example, if I am at Fixed Pack 1 and I want to upgrade to Fixed Pack 4, can I just download the Fixed Pack 4 from the website, or I should do it one by one?
The Fixed Packs are cumulative of the previous ones. So if you're good if you just download the Fixed Pack 4, and that should get you to from your existing 1 to 4.
Okay. Thank you. And I believe also with this Installation Manager, I can install like separate APARs. Like if there's an APAR is out there, I can install it individually. This is correct?
Yes. Okay. You can install individual iFixes. It would have been nice if I have shown an install of an iFix, but then as it is, there's too much information in there. But yeah, to answer your question, yes, you could go ahead and then pick an individual iFix and then install on top of your existing version 8.
Okay, thank you.
At this time, there is a question from David Sivori. Your line is open.
Hello. I noticed you mentioned you can have an iFix. I remember the old days where you'd have to remove iFixes before you added a fix pack. Does the IM take care of all that information if you've added a fix, say, to fix pack 2, and now you want to go to fix pack 4?
Very good question. I think our installation manager does recognize the iFix that is being installed, and then it would override that and then install your fix pack that you're installing on top of it. So it will take care of it. This also kind of falls in where the installation manager provides the capability to check the prereqs and for any interdependencies between the fix packs or the iFixes.
Does it also take care of all your extra nodes like your IHS and the external nodes to your WAS?
Again, I think IHS is considered as a separate product as far as the installation manager is concerned. So let's say if you have installed IHS using the installation manager, and then it would be the same as what you're doing with your version 8 product.
Right, so you'd have to install the IM for IHS. Sorry, you'd have to download and install IHS into your IM and then deploy that to your nodes where you have IHS, and then you'd be able to manage them.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you.
At this time, there are no further questions.
Okay, thank you, Audra. And I don't see any questions in the group chat. So at this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable. We appreciate your participation and hope you'll join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Sri, for presenting today.
Thank you.